As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The race is on, but testing is all over. 6 days at Barcelona have flown by in a flash, and after a frantic final day of running, we finally have all the answers to our questions. Or do we? I'm Ed Straw, and joining me for the definitive verdict on F1 pre-season testing are Scott Mitchell and Gary Anderson. Well, before I speak to any of my guests, I think I should set the scene. We're in an authentic lobby of a Spanish airport hotel. Obviously, we're going to be flying back tomorrow morning. We've all got a nice a sneaky beverage delivered. We're sort of in the corner of the restaurant area, so it's a little bit of noise in the background. You might be able to hear the commentary on Real Sociedad versus Villarreal in the background. That's quite quiet. You might not be able to pick that up, and you might hear some incidental noise. But we're here, so we're ready for tapas straight after finishing. So we're going to absolutely crack on with things. But Scott Mitchell, you're looking very relaxed there with your beverage of choice.
This is the happiest I've been from testing. I've got a goldfish bowl of a G&T. I've got my favourite tiki shirt on, and I've got a bit of football on the telly. I'm delighted. This is how all podcasts should start.
Well, I'm hoping you're going to be paying attention and fully engaged in this. You're not going to get too relaxed. You're also in quite a reclining sort of chair as well.
I'm ready to analyse the first week of testing it.
Well, you weren't ready to do that last week, so that's a bonus for the listeners.
Baby steps, Ed, baby steps.
And we've also got Gary Anderson, also looking equally relaxed, I would say. You've been crunching numbers and digesting testing, so this is our testing verdict podcast. So, Gary, come on, you are the master of verdicts. What is your verdict?
Well, yeah, head spinning a little bit with all the numbers, and it's very, very difficult, obviously. I mean, you know, we've tried over many years to perfect something that we can call a reasonable direction, but, you know, we really don't know the inside of the team stuff. We really don't know the fuel loads they're carrying, but so I've come up with a system of trying to average out the lap times. There's three main tires used here, C3, C4, C5. Now, different cars run on different ones, but I've averaged out the lap time so that no matter what tire you were on, I've created a lap time for the different tires, and then I've averaged out all those three as well. So I try to cut down the potential errors as much as possible, and I get this, you know, a different lap time from what the cars have done because it's the average of those three compounds. And, you know, again, we get initially we get Red Bull and Mercedes, you know, side by side, theoretically doing a 1:16.01, 1:16.06, Racing Point doing a 1:16.3, Renault 16.6, Ferrari doing a 16.7, McLaren 16.8, AlphaTauri 16.9, Haas 17.0, Williams 17.2, and Alfa Romeo 17.2. But, you know, that is without taking into account anything else, fuel loads or whatever. So again, went a bit more into depth with it, with a few loads that we have experience of in the past. You know, we know the bigger teams usually continue their test program with the fuel loads as best possible. And the smaller teams sometimes have a bit of a drain out to try and do a bit more of a better lap time. You know, nothing wrong with that whatsoever, because at some point in time, that's what's going to happen anyway. So you might as well, you know, get on the wagon and have a look at it and see how the car responds. And we get a slight change in that, because the big teams, as I say, I'm talking about 50 kilograms of fuel still in the car, and 10 kilograms of fuel is about 0.33 of a second. So it can make a significant difference. And we get Red Bull still at the top of the field, doing a 1 minute 14.3, which is, you know, pretty quick. I expected them to do like a 14.5 on a low fuel run. So I don't think that's that far away from really the ultimate lap time. Just ahead of Mercedes with a 14.4, Ferrari with a 15.0, Racing Point with a 15.3, McLaren 15.5, AlphaTauri with a 15.6, Renault a 15.9, Alfa Romeo 16.2, Haas 16.4, and Williams 16.5. So, you know, as I say, there's a lot of stuff going into making those numbers up. They are by no means perfect, but I think from the information we have, they're as good a guideline as we've got at this point in time.
Yeah, it's always difficult. It's something akin to alchemy, turning the raw data into real numbers. And you always are very, very kind of data dependent and use the numbers as they are. But ultimately, Scott, overall, we still sort of feel it's Mercedes' test, isn't it, despite a few little problems?
Yeah, and maybe that is... it's probably getting a bit boring hearing this, to be honest, but I just feel like everything that happens to them just is indicative of why they're so good. They've moved on to their third engine for the works team in the test. The customer team, Williams, not Racing Point, but Williams had various problems as well. And I think even on the very final day, there was another minor issue going on. Mercedes had to end a third of their days early because of setbacks. I believe they were running the engine turned down a little bit as well on the final day of running today because of all the problems that they've had. And yet they still come out on top with more mileage than anybody else and what looks like a faster car as well. It sounds from what I was speaking to Lewis Hamilton today in his media session, and from what Lewis was saying, he's got a lot of confidence and feel in this car. He seems like he's actually able now to go to Melbourne and just feels like he could just stick it on track and get on with it, and don't really feel like Mercedes was ever really at that point last year. So it has been a nice and smooth pre-season test from that perspective. I think they've got the car where they want it. It is just a little bit fragile on the reliability side. We know that they've pushed really hard to improve the engine over the winter. They've lost that status as the benchmark engine in F1 now. They're trying to get it back. Maybe they've taken a little bit of a risk. Maybe they've pushed a little bit too hard. Hopefully they're going to have, they will hope that they've got the countermeasures in place so that when they get to Australia, they'll be able to start on the right foot. But yeah, there is that little question mark over them despite a very encouraging pre-season test.
Would you say, Gary, Mercedes are where your money is?
Yeah, I think you would put your money down. I mean, they're going to be there or thereabouts for sure. The problem is this reliability issue. I mean, the time that I've taken for these numbers here from Mercedes was the time that Valtteri Bottas set on the C5 tyre, the very soft tyre, on the third day of the first test. And today, Valtteri again was quickest in theory on the day, but he was 0.46 of a second slower than he was after three days testing ago. So obviously they've had to turn down the engine a bit or do something with it, because normally you would see a little bit of a improvement, and we saw that from every other team, but we didn't see it from them. So the problems are maybe not just quite as small as we make out. And obviously they're going to be digging in there pretty deep, but you know, this is Friday. This is first practice in 2 weeks' time in Australia. So there's not a lot of time to really get into it, to try and identify the problems and rectify them. So making bits for engines, if they have to do something like that, it's not an overnight job. You know, there's some serious materials in there and treatments and all sorts of stuff that take time. So we'll wait and see. But they've had more problems here, reliability-wise, with themselves and Williams than I think they'd have liked to have had.
Yeah, I think it's dependent on exactly what the nature of the problem is. They might have identified it and know how to fix it, but haven't quite been able to do it. One of the staff approaching us, I think, to take our order there, and then quickly backed away when they saw what we were up to. Very very helpful. And we are going to, don't worry, we are going to order some tapas shortly, but we'll keep talking for a bit. But yeah, Mercedes are very, very good at reacting to this. They'd already had a few countermeasures for an MGUH problem that first showed on the Williams in the first test. So they're on it, but the extent of the problem, we don't really know at this stage. Let's move on to who's actually challenging Mercedes, Scott. Where do you feel it's Red Bull and Ferrari, depending on how you dice the numbers? Red Bull looks much stronger on single lap pace, adjusted pace, but Ferrari showing a few hints of being a bit better on race pace. So it's quite hard to gauge those two, especially as Red Bull had so many off-track moments.
It is hard to judge, and I think part of that is because even today was a continuation of this very murky picture through pre-season. It feels like this has been the hardest one to judge for a few years now. And there is that inability to split Red Bull and Ferrari depending on how you want to judge them. But I think if I look at what Gary's seen trackside from the Red Bull, I think how consistent Gary's been with how impressive Red Bull is, I can't shake how impressed I've been from what I hear and see from Max off track. It's very rare you have that feeling from a driver where just even if there's a small setback, if there's a spin, if there's a bit of time in the garage in the morning, it's just the face is just a picture of confidence afterwards. And the way he talks is just like they're doing everything they want to do. And I think we said this before, it might be that they're really happy, everything's working well, and then they get to Australia and they've got a nice handling car, but it's a tenth or two off the pace and they're not in the mix. But I just don't get the feeling that I spoke to Honda's technical director Toyoharu Tanabe this evening, and he seems, you know, he said he was happy but never confident, and that's sort of been their narrative for the last year now. On the Honda side, they seem to have done everything that they wanted to do. The Red Bull side, they seem to have done everything they want to do. Max, it feels at home in the car. I'm really struggling to find a reason not to believe that Red Bull will go out and be Mercedes' nearest challenger.
The time I used for Red Bull on the calculation was done on the C3 tyre. And he was on a better lap on the C4 tyres. First and second section was up, but he made a mistake in the third section. So although the lap was a little bit faster, it wasn't as representative for the tyre. So it wasn't really good for me to take for my calculation. So I think there's time in there, but he has had a lot of spins. It does seem to be an area where in the slow corners, especially the turn 13 as the corner before the chicane, he's been off there a few times. It just seems to be there's a going into that corner, the rear end gives up a little bit, and that's what happened to him today as well with the C4 tyre. You know, got a bit sideways on him, so he lost the lap time. But you know, they've got time to fix it. This is going to be a lot of work on the simulator trying to identify that problem and have a bit of a play with it. It's not a bit like Mercedes. Mercedes obviously has got a reliability problem that they're looking at. But for Red Bull, it's more simulator work, trying to come up with solutions to their problems, the handling problems. And they've done enough laps to recognise them, so now they've just got to rectify them.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out. I mean, the general feeling is that Mercedes has a handy advantage, and I wouldn't be surprised if that does translate to quite a big advantage in Melbourne, because often they are very, very strong at that circuit. And I can foresee a situation where they absolutely dominate Melbourne and everyone's like, oh, it's just going to be the same again. But, you know, I think it could be a little bit more interesting than that as the season goes on. I don't think we need to be doom and gloom, oh, it's going to be a Mercedes walkover again, even if they are going to ultimately win a seventh consecutive double. There is pressure that can build there.
And on the Australia point, I think the other thing that stands in their favour is the noise coming out of the Mercedes camp from the drivers, and what you've seen on track is that car does look very stable and confident. If Ferrari are still trying to figure exactly where their best setup is now on this car that's gone for more downforce and compared to the lower drag solution they had last year, and Red Bull does have that slightly nervy rear end, those are two things. Both those teams are going to have something at Melbourne that you just don't want on that kind of track. Bumpy, unpredictable, low grip. You want a car that's going to go there and be absolutely planted. And that's what Mercedes got. The other two don't. So it could be that you go there, they do have that edge, and it looks a little bit bigger. And then we go to Bahrain. Fingers crossed we do actually go to Bahrain. And the gap shrinks a bit.
Yeah, I think what we've got with Mercedes, Red Bull and Ferrari is that, again, the same thing. Mercedes have got a car for all occasions in reality. I don't think Ferrari and Red Bull have quite got that. There'll be tracks where the Red Bull will be super quick, and there'll be tracks where Ferrari will probably be very quick. But at the minute, I can see the overall average of Mercedes being just that little bit stronger. You know, the car's very good to drive, I believe. It looks good. It's good in the bumps. It's, you know, does everything right. So I think they can go there fairly well set up. I don't want to see them dominate. I want to see them having a race for it. I don't care who wins in the end of the day, but I want to see a race before the you know, the season sort of unfolds.
Let's talk about Ferrari then. We know they took a slightly different approach to testing. We know, as Scott alluded to, that they seem to have a little bit more drag on the car. They've pushed to get downforce. You know, often you do get a little bit more of one with a little bit more of the other. Should we say there is a relationship there? Ferrari, some reasonably encouraging long runs, relatively sedate on the single lap pace. But Ferrari, how much are they managing expectations? How much are they trying to just downplay everything? And have they got a load of pace in their locker they're going to unleash in Australia, do you think, Scott? Or do you think it's more that they're not as far off as some people suggest, but they've still got a bit of work to do?
Well, I think there is a scenario where both sides are right, where Ferrari say they're not hiding or playing games, but what Mercedes says about how much they're holding back is true, because we know that they're not a second off the pace or probably even 5 or 6 tenths off the pace. But just because they say that they're behind, it could mean that they're only a tenth or two behind. Ferrari are adamant that they're not playing games. Mercedes and Honda are pretty adamant that it's the other way around, and actually, yeah, they're holding plenty back. But we didn't see anybody take all the fuel out and then crank everything up to 11 and go for it. So I do find these sort of accusations, like, I don't know if they're mind games or whatever. Lewis Hamilton said today that mind games are the sort of thing that only weak-minded people play, because you need to resort to this psychological warfare because you can't win in a straight fight. But it's just tricky to know exactly where Ferrari stand. They some of the stuff they've said this week has been a little bit contradictory. You know, one minute they're absolutely adamant they're behind, and the next minute they're saying you can't draw conclusions from testing. It's kind of like, well, what is saying you're behind if not a conclusion? I suspect they're not quite as well sorted as Mercedes. They're going to be maybe a tenth or two off the pace, if not a little bit more at the moment. And it just comes down to how much they can refine it in time for Australia. Because if they do have a concept that is fundamentally producing more downforce and more performance, then maybe they do have a package that can challenge. But if they're not getting it right and it's just not quite there and working out, it's not going to show ultimately in the lap time.
No, it's difficult because, you know, obviously they changed their philosophy a bit, or it looks like they've changed their philosophy a bit, to go for more downforce, and the tyre reacts to that. But then you take the long runs that I've had a look at tonight as well. I mean, I calculate that from my times with the fuel load and that Ferrari are about 6 tenths slower than Mercedes. Lewis Hamilton did a race run at the first test, and I've plotted all the laps, and Leclerc did a race run today in the test. And basically, if you take the time lost, it works out at 6 tenths per lap to Leclerc. So my low fuel running at time as such and their race average lap time is about 6 tenths difference in both of them. So, you know, you can't do a race run without starting with a car full of fuel, and you probably end up with it pretty near empty. So you can't hide from that, really. That's the law of physics. It just happens. And so you can relate that to your delta time on low fuel, and we're not far away on that one. So whether the time is correct or not, that's a different question. But I think the delta between Mercedes and Ferrari is not far away, and 6 tenths is a lot. You know, last year they were a lot closer than that, significantly closer than that on most occasions. But 6 tenths is a big bridge to fill. And, you know, I haven't, as I said many times, I haven't seen the body language in Ferrari to say it's just around the corner, we just need to turn this knob. And watching the car in the track, I don't think it's just around the corner, need to turn this knob. It looks all okay, you know?
We should also say that Barcelona can be a circuit that exaggerates gaps, just like Albert Park is, actually. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if we see a big advantage for Mercedes in Australia. And then when it comes to Bahrain, you're going to be dealing in a few tenths here and there. So I think let's see how it all plays out, assuming the races all go ahead with goings on. But so I think we've kind of gone Mercedes 1, Red Bull 2, Ferrari 3. I personally feel that second or third, there's different ways you can dice that. You can make an argument Ferrari is potentially stronger than Red Bull, although on balance of probability, it feels like Red Bull's ahead. So it's been a little bit messy in that regard. It doesn't feel quite as clear-cut as last year, which is probably for the better, given how difficult it was to call things last year.
Yeah, I mean, you can sort of move it around any way you want just by changing the numbers a little bit. But I think we could see Red Bull a little bit closer to the front. I don't think they'll be fighting with Ferrari. I'd be surprised if they are. But hopefully all three of those will actually get it hooked up in Melbourne. And, you know, we'll see a really competitive race. Because last year, Mercedes surprised himself, you know. Ferrari surprised himself. They were so bad. So that was a bit of a shock to them. I think they'll be going, both teams will be going to Melbourne a little bit more prepared than they were last year. Mercedes trying to work out why they were so good, so they'll be a bit more prepared. And Ferrari trying to work out why they were so bad. And so, you know, there's a lot of homework to do.
And this has been the big question through testing over every day for the last 2 weeks now. How much is Ferrari just trying to, you know, recover from the narrative that hurt them so badly last year, which was be the king of pre-season and then turn up to Australia and have your pants pulled down? And Ferrari, again, they say they're not hiding anything, that this isn't about that, because their argument, and be interesting actually, Gary, to get your take on this, their argument is that if you're claiming that they're going slowly now to take the pressure off them so that then they look like heroes when they turn to Australia, what Binotto said is just like, when you're at Ferrari, you get crucified in the Italian press and within the company for going slowly. So all this is going to be doing, if they were holding back, is adding the pressure to then go to Melbourne and do a good job.
No, I agree 100% with that. You can't, you know, with Ferrari, you can't let one day go past without trying to do the best job you can, because, you know, the Italian media will just destroy you completely. You know, the writing's on the wall at the minute. It just depends on whether they're using block capitals or not.
Is anybody going to say that Mercedes aren't going to win in Australia?
I am. So, you know, from my point of view, it's so easy to say that Mercedes are winning in Australia. And you're probably right. But at the end of the day, I genuinely believe that Red Bull are strong enough to pull something out of there. They need to do a little bit of work before they get there, but it's work that they can do away from the track. And if they do that, I would be, if I was a betting man and I was going out now, I mean, I'd look at the odds as well. And I think the odds on Max Verstappen winning Australia would be a lot better than Lewis Hamilton winning or Valtteri Bottas winning Australia. So I would put my 10p on the guy who's giving me the best odds.
Your whole fee for working for the race?
Yes.
Fantastic.
Yes,
yeah. Wow.
That's 2 weeks testing, 6 days, 10p. That's not bad.
Don't work out your hourly rate, Gary. You'll be disappointed.
It's more than I used to earn from Eddie Jordan.
That's very true. Yeah, very true. Not a high bar. But Scott, are you going Mercedes?
Yeah, I think it is Mercedes, definitely.
Okay, that was a good short answer. I'm going Mercedes, but I take what Gary's saying, but I think it's going to be a bit closer than people think. And although I think Australia might be a bit exaggerated, I think it's going to come together a bit more as the season progresses. Well, we're going to take a very, very brief break. We're going to get our tapas order in, all importantly, and then we're going to be back to talk a little bit more about the other teams and what's going on in the midfield. Well, welcome back. We've got our dinner ordered, which is the important thing. Before we move on to the midfield, I should say there is also a big talking point today which emerged 12 minutes, I think it was, before the end of testing, with Ferrari releasing with the FIA releasing a press release about an investigation and analysis they've done of the Ferrari power unit. We're not going to talk about that in this podcast, but if you head to our YouTube channel, you'll find a video that discusses what we know about that and exactly what's gone on there. I think it's a sort of fairly significant story, so one that's is well worth taking a look at. Scott Mitchell obviously has delved into that intensely. So if you look for the Races YouTube channel, the video title is FIA Drops Ferrari Engine Settlement Bombshell as F1 Testing Ends. So search for that, and myself and Scott Mitchell will join you in video form to tell you all about that. But let's talk about the midfield. Gary Anderson, the fastest raw lap, as it were, was of Renault. I don't think any of us think Renault is at the front of the midfield, right at the front of the midfield at the moment. So who is, and who are we looking for to lead the way and lead the challenge?
No, I don't. I don't believe Renault are, you know, heading the midfield. Obviously, it's a big battle there because that fourth place, it's a very coveted position. And it's also the gap to third that has been the problem in the past. So although the midfield has been great racing, all of them wanted to close that gap down and join that club at the front.
Probably smaller, but still there this year.
Probably smaller, but still, well, it will be smaller. I'll stick my neck out and say that, but still there. And at the minute, if we take that head in the midfield, top the three teams that are up the front of the midfield, for me, are Racing Point, McLaren and AlphaTauri, which was Toro Rosso last year. So again, it's a fiddle with the fuel loads and whatever, but I think that Racing Point have looked good. They've been quick all week. You know, they're doing a good job.
Everyone feels they're going to be leading the midfield, don't they? Everyone in all the teams do. I think journalists do. I think the drivers are very, very confident. Actually, those in Racing Point are very happy. They've really got this kind of Mercedes clone right.
Well, yeah. I mean, people are calling it the pink Mercedes, and they're not that far wrong. But they, you know, Racing Point learned a bit of a philosophy change with looking at trying to build the Mercedes. And I understand the way they went about it, and I do think it's possible. Tough, but possible. But basically, that when they got the car to a level where it was probably producing the sort of downforce levels that give you the opportunity to compare to what you've done in the past, they discovered that the characteristics of the car aerodynamically were very, very different from what they had pursued for many years. And basically, it's pretty simple and had a much more stable aerodynamic platform as opposed to very peaky downforce. Racing Point's old cars probably had a bit more downforce, but it was like a knife edge. You never could use it because it would just go away from you just that quickly, just from a ride height change or whatever. So they learned a new philosophy. They've pursued that new philosophy, and they've developed what was last year's Mercedes concept a bit further, basically. And I think they got a good car. It looks good in the track. It's one of those cars, maybe watch it. It's always doing okay. You know, it's never doing anything wrong. I've got them down at the minute to be only like 0.3 behind Ferrari. It's 0.9 behind Mercedes. And to be honest, you'd expect that. You know, we're looking at a pink 2019 Mercedes as such. And through the year, you know, Mercedes should have found 0.9. So it's not that far wrong. But as you say, the drivers like it, all that sort of stuff. And they'll buy into that. And they're a good race team. You know, Racing Point are a racing team. They don't, on a Sunday, they do a good job. So I think they could be a pain in a few people's side.
And the team itself is also indicating that they've sort of got Ferrari in their scopes. I think they've bought into the fact that Ferrari is a little bit off the front too. But they seem to be quite open to the idea that they might at least be able to. Maybe they'll be a bit closer to Ferrari for third place in Australia than they will be the rest of the midfield. And starting to now feel like maybe I was a bit too cynical writing off their claims that they would be able to finish fourth in the championship and be closer to third than they would be fifth. At the time, that was on the basis that they would be designing their own car from scratch. And I know that they have still done all the design and development work and construction of these parts, but, you know, fair play to them. They've gone down this route. I think it's quite sensible, even though you could argue whether or not it's morally right or against the sort of spirit of what F1's meant to be or whatever. But I think this sort of thing's always been done to a degree. This is just an escalation in the trend, I suppose. And at the moment, you have to say it's been validated by what we've seen in pre-season.
We had quite a good debate about that in our verdict from the first test podcast. I would say if people want to go back through the previous days of podcasts, there's a bigger picture of testing you can get from there. So yeah, Racing Point, yeah, I'd have my money on them to lead the way in the midfield. They are a really good team. They took fourth in the championship in two consecutive years, when they really shouldn't have done in terms of the overall resource, the financial problems they had. That team is absolutely, I really rate it. And of course, Gary Anderson, you can take a fraction of the credit, because of course you started that team as Jordan. You were technical director there for many years.
Well, many years ago, but I feel proud for some of the people there, because there's a lot of the people are the same guys. Andy Green, the technical director, is somebody that he was part of the original Jordan 3 as such. Myself, Andrew and Mark Smith were the people responsible for designing the first car. So, yeah, I look at it with a little bit of a smile, and I still see some things on the car that came from, you know, the history of Jordan as such. So it's nice to see those little features appear again. So, yeah, I would love to see them get back to fourth in the championship from a personal point of view, but I'd also like to make sure, I'd like to see them close the gap to those top three a little bit. And I think both of those can be achieved this year. They have to, you know, the finishing fourth is one of those things that it's down to some of the other teams that are around them as opposed to them. They'll do the best job they can. They'll do a very good job. And I just like to see the gap from that team that's fourth to third being smaller than what we've seen in the past.
Yeah, it's interesting that that battle at the front of the midfield, everyone fears Racing Point. McLaren, I think we've kind of got as their the sort of number five, shall we say. Carlos Sainz Jr. earlier today was saying that the teams he sort of felt were McLaren's strongest midfield opposition were Racing Point. Yep, okay. And AlphaTauri was the other team that he picked out. So we've kind of got this group. Renault are kind of in that vicinity. I kind of feel like AlphaTauri could start the season ahead of Renault, and then maybe Renault's got more ultimate potential. But to be honest, that group of four feels like it might be that they might be that they should be the top four in the midfield. But yeah, if that's the case, that's worrying for Renault, isn't it? Because they may not win the midfield. They might be able to manage expectations and get away with that. They should be winning the midfield, frankly, as a works team. But you know, fifth, they can't be. If they're seventh, that doesn't even warrant thinking about, does it, Scott?
I think it's really, really problematic because you've got this interesting sort of collection of teams in the midfield, mate, and their setups are all different. You've got the Renault works team, you've got McLaren, this fallen giant from the past, but with massive wealth attached to it,
and a Renault engine,
and a Renault engine, customer team. Yep, Renault customer team, Racing Point, which is willingly copied the Mercedes design from last year, but is going to become the Aston Martin works team next year. AlphaTauri taking the parts from Red Bull and is the Red Bull junior team. Alfa Romeo, which is like a commercial works team, but is really Sauber. And it's just, it's a very interesting mix. And I feel like what we're seeing so far in pre-season, while it might only be applicable to 2020, because Racing Point won't be able to do this again next year, if they try and do the 2020 Mercedes for the 2021, I think they're going to fall foul of quite a few technical rules. But regardless of the fact that that particular concept is only valid for one season, I feel like the midfield battle can pose quite a big, wider philosophical question for F1 this year, because, as you say, Ed, if a works team putting a load of money into it, it's basically wasting their time and money because they're only going to finish sixth and seventh. And I know that is basically assuming Renault's doing the best job possible, and I don't think it is.
It's definitely not.
No.
I mean, there's real potential there, good people, good resources, but there's something that's not clicking about Renault.
Well, as I've pointed out a few times now, I still find it absolutely baffling because they're using a car this year, the design of it and the early development of it has been signed off by people who they've binned off because they don't think are good enough to work there anymore. So, or good enough to fulfill those ambitions. So Renault are in this really weird place. And then you've got McLaren, which obviously built a load of good momentum last year. And I actually think they still look in pretty decent nick. Andrea Seidel seems really happy with what they've worked through. So maybe...
Well, they had the McLaren. They brought some new parts to this test.
Everything seems to work.
They were struggling a little bit still in the slow corners in the first test, but they've improved. New diffuser. Gary wrote a piece on theRace.com about what that was to try and achieve. So I think McLaren are looking quite sensible. I think McLaren should be pretty happy with things.
But I'm perfectly happy to also say that, you know, AlphaTauri should look really good because we know how good the 2019 Red Bull was. They've taken a lot of fundamental parts from that, as much as the regulations allow, and then a very sensible technical team there has therefore been allowed to focus its development on the areas that they need to focus on. So I don't see any reason why AlphaTauri shouldn't be very good, and you can argue whether or not a team with that sort of setup should be able to do as good a job as McLaren or Renault, but the fact is that's what the regulations allow, and that's why we've got this mix of teams.
It is, yeah. I mean, I think that AlphaTauri, one of their decent advantages, I suppose, is the two drivers in Gasly and Kvyat. They've got two drivers that actually visited for a short time the pressures of a top team, Red Bull. So they've come back to a more family-oriented team, but they remember that pressure that a top team has from going from a small team. I'm not quite sure McLaren is as good as I've got here now, because I did the same race run thing with Sainz compared to Hamilton and Leclerc, and I find them a little bit more of a disadvantage. I've got them down here as relative to Mercedes as 1.1 seconds. I think that might be a little bit more than that, to be honest. Might be knocking on the door of 1.3. So, yes, I think Racing Point, McLaren and AlphaTauri will be the next three. We've talked about Red Bull, Ferrari and Mercedes. I think Racing Point will have the advantage. I think that McLaren and AlphaTauri will be ducking and diving, you know, the same as the top three in reality. So there'll be two ducking and diving and one out front. And I think Racing Point have got the racing instinct to take that forward and very well.
Yeah, it should make for a really intense competition, actually, in that midfield. It's going to be a tight group. So we've kind of got those, should we say, four teams. We're not quite sure about Renault at the moment. Obviously, you mentioned the question marks about whether they've quite got the mechanical platform, whether it's an aero problem, a bit of understeer they're trying to solve. So, yeah, we need to see a bit more there. And then we've got the group at the back of the midfield. When I'm sort of talking about these three teams at the back of the midfield, this is maybe separated from the rest by about a tenth and a half, probably. So this is really, really small stuff, and it would take very, very little in terms of performance swings for one of these teams to move up. So we've got Alfa Romeo that set some very quick times during much of testing, although ended up, I think, with the ninth or tenth fastest time overall, if you go with pure fastest times. We've got Williams, which we know has taken a big step forward. They've got a car they can go racing with, so they're pretty happy. And we've also got Haas that spent a huge amount of time data gathering, trying to see if they've got this aero problem carried over that they think they've eliminated, but that caused all their problems last year, including the tyre troubles. So we've got that group of three teams. Who do we think is going to be at the back of that group? Or do you think it's just literally going to be an absolutely frenzied battle to get through to Q2?
Yeah, I mean, my order I've got is Alfa Romeo, and the time that actually is being taken as the yardstick here to do all these calculations was actually Robert Kubica in the car testing on the fourth day. So Robert, you know, in a car that's got some grip, he did a good job there. Again, we have no idea about fuel loads and whatever, but
I imagine that Polish sponsor Orland quite like the idea of that quick time.
I'm estimating it was pretty low, but if you want to depress your drivers very much, you know, you can. That's the sort of thing the games you play. So you just need to be careful with all that stuff because it's very easy to your two race drivers to get a bit downtrodden with it all. But anyway, I've got Alfa Romeo, Haas, and then Williams. Now, the thing about Williams, it's on the back of the field. It's not detached from the back of the field, which is the important thing for them this year. They've got to be in there racing because they are, again, like Racing Point, a really good race team. And give them an opportunity and they'll take it. So I think by getting on the back of that field, that will be a mix. You'll see them, you know, up in seventh sometimes, eighth, ninth, tenth, just because they get it right on the day. But they've a massive improvement. And, you know, I've got them 2.1 seconds slower than Mercedes. I actually think they're a little bit better than that in reality, but I don't want to just sort of bed or not believe my numbers. I created my numbers from the bit of knowledge that I've got, which is probably very little, but on the facts that I get from a load of people. You know, you look at the fastest lap times, and as Scott was saying earlier, to me, look at how many laps everybody did after they did their fastest lap time. The most was two for the whole grid. They did their fastest lap time and then two laps. In the past, we'd have seen them doing 6 or 7, 8, 10 maybe. So you can calculate that fuel load that they've used. But this isn't like that. So I think a lot of teams are going out and giving it some welly. Not saying they're on 5 kilograms of fuel, but my lightest fuel load is 20 kilograms, which is still, you know, a substantial amount. It's 20% of a full fuel tank. So you're not running on fumes. You're actually still trying pretty hard. But for Williams, if they can hang on to the back of the field and mix it on a few occasions with the other couple of teams in front of them, that will be a massive achievement for them. And I hope we can do it.
I feel like Haas is the team that's sort of the biggest unknown at the back, because Alfa Romeo, I agree with what Gary says. I feel like we've seen what that car's capable of, because there was I don't believe it was a coincidence that Kubica gets when he's in the car. And don't get me wrong, absolutely lovely to see the guy top an official F1 day again. But I think that's the car pretty close to what it's capable of. And there's not really anything about it that massively excites me. And reading what Gary's written about the rear wing and the front wing and just sort of the the philosophy they seem to be sort of making up as they go almost, and it's just a bit confusing. Williams, as Gary says, looks a lot closer, looks more at the races, looks like a real racing car on track, which is very nice. And they've also had a lot of setbacks since the first couple of days of testing as well, with things outside of their control on the engine side. So the fact that they've been able to work through that and do stuff, that, you know, they've had some stuff to overcome, and it hasn't been their fault, unlike 12 months ago when they were the architects of their own downfall. So Williams is really interesting, and I want to see George Russell in the mix. Haas haven't got a clue, to be completely honest, because, as you say, they've been working through a lot of stuff. It's been really, really important for them. I feel like if any team has needed to correlate what they've done back at base with what they've got on track, it's Haas, because of how badly 2019 got away from them. And at some point I thought, okay, right, that will go, because at some point we will see them really, really go at it. And still feels like waiting to see exactly where they slot in. At the moment, I've got them at the back, not right at the back. I think they're ahead of Williams. But how many times have we seen Haas go to Australia and absolutely nail it in Melbourne and be in Q3? For me, that would require a big jump from what I've seen of the leading teams in the midfield now. But I wouldn't want to rule them out just because I don't really know where they stand.
Well, Haas are the dark horses. They've been very cautious in terms of what they've been saying, because they're so aware of the fact they didn't detect this problem in pre-season testing last year or in Melbourne. So they've been very, very, very cautious about that. Kevin Magnussen on day two of testing started to kind of suggest, well, he did the first race simulation and he said, well, the tyres are behaving differently to what they did in race conditions last year. And I asked him, well, does that mean that you're confident you've eliminated this error problem? He said, well, he wouldn't go that far, but he said, well, exactly. He said they're different, and that's probably a good thing. So, you know, signs for hope there. And we know what Haas can do. They've got a load of 2020 Ferrari parts on that car. They had the fourth fastest car in 2018 and finished fifth in the Constructors' Championship. So there could be some undeployed pace to see in that car. Although right now you've kind of got them down at the back. Williams, George Russell said, we're definitely the slowest car. I wonder whether there's a little bit of managing expectations, and then I think Williams probably fancy their chances to, you know, they're not going to be up there in Q3 week in, week out by any means, but I think they really do think they can properly go racing with the teams at the back. So let's see what they can do. And yeah, Alfa Romeo, I don't know. I'm possibly being a little bit unfair on them. I'm just a little bit wary about where that car's at. I think we've seen a lot of the performance and the driver lineup. Kimi Raikkonen, brilliantly consistent, brilliant feedback. He'll deliver decent races. Antonio Giovinazzi, a driver I rate, but struggled to string everything together last year. Yeah, I mean to be convinced by Alfa Romeo, but at the same time, we could go to the first few races and any one of those three teams we've got the back could find a few tenths, and suddenly it's a different proposition. It is so, so close there. And I think we can all, in terms of the midfield battle, certainly be pretty excited, because not only is there that sort of slight chance Racing Point might be able to pull off something remarkable and bother the top three, I probably don't think they will, but there's that tiny hope. But the whole rest of them are just in this mass, so it's brilliant, and I think they're going to be closer than they were. This is positive, isn't it?
Yeah, it's for sure. It's all positive. The thing I'd say at the minute is, if you go out in the circuit and look at the cars, the real quick cars just have good grip, and then, you know, the lesser teams, and I'm talking about lesser because of budget and because of manpower, because all that stuff adds up, you can see they have just a little bit less grip. They just use a bit more track, some understeer here and there, nothing too dramatic, but it just as a grip level thing. The only car that I would jump in and say that I could see a problem is the Renault. Whenever they get the understeer, it then bites. Whenever you're sliding with the front tyre then grips on the Renault, and the rear gives a bit of a nasty shake around. And they really don't ride the bumps very well. Through the bumps on turn 8 going up the hill to turn 9, they ride the curb there, and there's a big sausage curb, and, you know, it's like two cars. The front and the rear act differently, whereas all the cars take it as one vehicle. They still bounce, but, you know, the Renault doesn't sort of bounce and land. It bounces and bounces again and bounces again and then lands. Going to the Haas then, from that, whenever they're going, the car looks great, all that, but whenever they seem to push that a little bit harder, the whole car gives up. It gets into a bit of a tank slapper. It just washes out, basically, grip-wise. So they could be having still some aerodynamic problems with that, because it's not as though the car just breaks into a bit of an understeer, or, you know, you can't, it's not a nice breakaway. It just, the front goes and then the rear goes and then the front goes, and, you know, before you know it, you're in the gravel trap. So it's not, it doesn't look that pleasant a car.
Yeah, Renault also worry me. I think if I was going to Australia and had a choice of a few cars, I'd be wanting a Racing Point, a McLaren, or maybe an AlphaTauri for the early part of the season in that order. Well, we've got a bit of a feel for the order going into the first race. I should say it's not definitive. It's testing at one track. The conditions aren't that representative. We really haven't seen everyone stretch their legs properly. I'd urge everybody who thinks that we're just looking at a massive walkover season from Mercedes to be a little bit patient and see how things shake out. There's a long way to go, as Sebastian Vettel always likes to say, but plenty of questions to be answered when the first race of the season happens. Hopefully that will be in Australia in the not-too-distant future. We'll be back to relatively normal podcast service next week. Obviously, we'll do our regular longer podcasts and then our extra episodes when exciting news develops, and we'll have a little bit more chat ahead of the season, a season preview coming up. And I should remind everyone, do have a look at our video on YouTube about the Ferrari engine bombshell. If you search for FIA drops Ferrari engine bombshell and the race, you'll find our YouTube channel. And yeah, please subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already, and follow us, because we're going to be there throughout the whole season. Thanks very much for joining us all the way through testing, and we will be back with more next week.